Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, roster is set for now. 53-man for the Texans. They get that stuff cut down yesterday. I would expect that this will not be the exact 53 they roll into week one with. I'm guessing that the staff, the personnel group, and the coaches are hard at work taking a look at what else is out there. Maybe even looking at some teams where there's some familiarity with guys on the coaching staff. We'll see. We'll hear from Nick Caserio in about an hour or so. What's the biggest thing you're hoping to hear from Nick Caserio today, Seth?
I'm really intrigued by the British Brooks stuff. I wonder what, I mean, it feels like, as Nick Caserio told Pat McAfee last week, that there are about five guys maybe that they were trying to make decisions on, or five spots they were trying to make decisions on. And it felt like in that final preseason game, they were going to see how British Brooks really could do as a blocker. Because there were about, I think there were more than 10 plays. I went through and I just grabbed video of all of his blocking, or not even when he was blocking, him lined up as a tight end or an H-back or a fullback in non-running back positions. He had 10 or more of those. And every time, not every time, but there were a few times when he had good blocks where British Brooks was looking towards the sideline. And to me, like, and he was yelling at somebody and pointing at somebody. I think somebody gave him a hell of a pep talk before the game and said something to, this would be my suspicion. Somebody said, look, man, this is your opportunity to make this roster. We want to see if you can do this. And this dude took the assignment and got an A++ on it.
Yeah, that's a great way
to put it. So, like, and it was really cool to go back and watch that part of it. I watched the TV copy so I could get that feel for it. Yeah. But there was one play where he was lined up as a tight end and he released on a route, but he gave a jam to the defensive end first, you know, to take some pepper out of his pass rush. Yeah. And it was as good of a jolt to another human as I've seen out of a Texans fullback since Vontae Leach.
Yes.
And it was awesome. Because he took that dude out of the play. He took three steps off of his pass rush. Mm-hmm. And then he was a wide open receiver after that, too. Then there was another play, Sean. Okay. On the fade to Nico. That, you know, okay, why? The fade to Nico in the end zone, where you're like, oh no, I'm sorry, it wasn't that one. But it was Tim Boyle had an option on a play. He could either go left and he threw a quick route out to the sideline. But the play that they had set up on the other side was British Brooks going out on a screen as a lead blocker for Cam Akers, and there was only one defender.
Oh wow!
And oh my God! I wish they would have gone to Cam on that, because it would have been British Brooks in the open field versus a safety.
Oh,
and beyond that, possibly a touchdown or a huge gain.
Yeah.
So the possibilities with him as a guy who can also run the ball and he can be used as a receiver. Like, that's everything you want in a modern fullback.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, look, we'd love to have a fullback out there, but he's got to be a capable receiver and bring something that makes the defense not so zeroed in on what you can and cannot do. I love the prospect for what British Brooks might be able to do for this offense.
Yeah, yeah. And that to me, that might have been the biggest surprise yesterday. Not that I was surprised because he doesn't deserve it, but just because... And it's hard for undrafted guys who really, you know, he hadn't popped in camp. He really popped for the first time in the fourth quarter of that Giants game when he scored two touchdowns. You know, like, he scored a tough, hard-nosed touchdown up the middle. And then the touchdown he scored to put the capper on things, he ran to the edge and got the edge and broke a 15-yard touchdown down the sideline, you know, in the red zone.
Yeah.
So he was doing good things already last week, and he had a really good week of practice at fullback. And then, obviously, as you pointed out, Seth, just did a lot of amazing things in the game. That, I think, is the biggest surprise. I think the other big surprises for me, and I don't know, like, now, once we now know that Case Keenum was dealing with a foot injury, I'm not surprised he's on IR. It was just shocking. Oh, crap, Case is not going to play this year. Case was a very important component of this team last year. He won a game for them in Tennessee, and we know how important he is to CJ. Now, the CJ stuff, I think, will, I'm assuming Case remains in the building all season providing whatever mentorship and enlightenment he's been giving to C.J. Stroud. That should still exist.
I think he'll still be a good resource. In some ways, this is always, you know, I've always wondered when it comes to like, oh, hey, this guy can be a coach on the field. I always think, yeah, but you know who's a lot cheaper to pay? Coaches.
Coaches.
So, that's how I used to feel. I've had enough conversations, and I like looking back on my own experience, there's something that a player in the room can provide that assistant coaches can't. And part of that is just that, you know, assistant coaches are involved in game planning. They got a whole lot of stuff going on. They got however many guys they have to worry about, you know, and sometimes it's more the stuff on the fringes or the stuff that's not in the syllabus, so to speak, that the player can be a huge asset for.
Oh, yeah.
And not to mention there's less of a barrier there, you know.
Yep.
There's less of a psychological barrier there.
It's a good one.
So I think he can be a huge asset for the team still. And he'll still make his player salary.
He will.
But he could perhaps be a really valuable assistant coach.
Especially this player. I mean, can you pick a guy off the top of your head that has the breadth of experience in different systems and on different teams and in different roles? And Case has been a highly paid starter. He's been a practice squad guy. You know, like, I don't know that there's anybody who has more different experiences to pull from than Case Keenum.
I never get more defensive on the behalf of other people than when backup quarterbacks who are in the media now get trashed for their backup status, because honestly, they're my favorite people to talk to about scheme because of that, everything that you just said. Generally, they've been in a lot of different systems, mm-hmm. and Case wasn't a backup his whole career, but he's been in a lot of systems. You know, he was kind of a fringe guy.
Yeah.
And also, though, because they have to make it with their brains.
Mm-hmm.
There is no guy that makes it 10 years as a backup quarterback who's kind of a dullard.
Right.
Like, they gotta really be able to pick up new systems. They got to be dependable so that a coach feels like, okay, we can trust this guy if he goes in. So, yeah, for all those reasons. And you know, Case, the other thing Case has going for him is that he was the ultimate man, came from a spread system in college, and was incredibly raw when he got to the NFL. Had a lot of bad habits based on, and I'm not criticizing the Art Briles system as a very effective college system, but it's a hard one to translate to the NFL. And so Case had to really learn a lot of those very basic lessons to get himself to being a solid and steady, capable NFL starter.
Yeah.
So I think he can empathize with a lot of the stuff that young quarterbacks are going through.
When he came into the league, well, he came into the league in 2012 as a practice squad guy, but when he got his chance in 2013, I remember that Kansas City game was his first start that year. That was the horrible year for the Texans when they went 2-14. But it felt like every game Case started, Kansas City game, the Indianapolis game, the one where Gary Kubiak had the stroke at halftime, I think the Arizona game that year as well. Like, Case was gangbusters in the first half, and then the second half they just pounded the red blitz button on him the whole time, and he's running backwards.
He was on all the classic college kid scramble stuff, like just spinning for no reason, eyes dropping, all the stuff, jump passes, all the stuff that you don't want to see out of a young quarterback. He had that, and that's what's so impressive, honestly, with his career is that it wasn't. I mean, there are a lot of Cougs at the time that would defend him no matter what, and like, the fact that they hated Gary Kubiak for, I don't know, giving him a chance to play in the NFL,
being the guy that signed him? Yeah.
Right. But no, it was real. He had some serious deficits to his game, and it's a huge testament to his work ethic that he was able to fix all of that and stay in the league as long as he did.
The last one for me, there were other big surprises, but the one I want to make sure we hit on, because I want to get to this, what's going on in Cleveland right now. It's fascinating. Kurt Heinisch being one of the two guys that they can use an IR short-term designation for and not be part of the 53. The other one was Christian Harris, who's understandable. He's a guy that's been flashing Pro Bowl-level potential. Heinisch is he's a grinder. He's a lunch pail guy. If you're using that designation on Kurt Heinisch, it means you didn't use it on Noah Brown, you didn't use it on Andrew Beck, any other injured guys you could have used it on. This tells me that Kurt Heinisch is, when he's done with whatever this injury is, he's going to be on this team for a spell, because otherwise, why would you use this designation for him?
The thing with Kurt Heinisch is that he's the kind of guy that I think D'Amico Ryans has a good respect for because of his dependability.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for the guy that is where he's supposed to be all the time and doesn't necessarily flash physically and with playmaking, but there's a stability and a dependability there that I think a former linebacker appreciates. And that's something that doesn't show up in the PFF grades or anything like that. And he's always going to be at risk of a guy like Khalil Davis, who's very similar in some respects, but also flashes more often. He's perpetually going to be a replaceable guy, but I think D'Amico probably values that part of him right now.
All right, so I've been poking my head in on some Cleveland radio of late. This cut actually came across my Twitter timeline last night, but 92.3 The Fan is our sister station up there. They're the flagship for the Cleveland Browns. Their afternoon show is Nick Wilson and Dustin Fox, who used to play in the NFL. He played for Ohio State, I know that. May have had a cup of coffee in the NFL, too. That's their afternoon show. The big topic up in Cleveland is they kept four quarterbacks. So whereas most of the teams, a majority kept two, some kept three. The Texans are in that two category. The Browns kept, Deshaun Watson, Jameis Winston, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and then one other who's escaping me right now. They kept four quarterbacks. The thought is that they're going to be trading either Jameis or the other guy whose name escapes me right now. So Jameis Winston, who's been a good backup in the NFL, you know, highly drafted guy, but been a good backup, and by the way, has been the guy that's popped up on all the viral videos for Cleveland this year as the guy who's the vocal front-facing leader of the football team during the preseason, right?
It's Tyler Huntley, by the way.
Tyler Huntley, thank you. Yeah, appreciate that. So they're either trying to move Jameis Winston or Tyler Huntley, reportedly.
Yeah.
The theory that's being espoused up there, and you're going to hear Nick Wilson talk about it here, is that there's a fear with Cleveland, they hypothesize, that we might be in a Flacco 2.0 situation here, where Joe Flacco came in, was gangbusters, and immediately became way more popular than the guy they're paying $230 million to. Here's Nick Wilson with that theory.
I'll say this. If the idea that Jameis, who's outgoing, who's fun, who's got all this energy, if the idea is that he is a threat to Deshaun Watson, and I'm saying from their standpoint.
Yeah, go ahead, say it for me, because I'm going to say the exact same thing.
This thing's cooked. There's not a shot in hell this is going to work out. If we're 3 years into this and you're worried about Deshaun's psyche because of a backup quarterback, and again, I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just acknowledging that could be the possibility. If we're worried about the feelings or Deshaun's ability to maintain a locker room because somebody else has, I don't know, really good at talking in front of people, if that ever came out from this, it would cause me to lose. I mean all remaining faith that I would have in Deshaun.
Yeah, dude, when the first Jameis pep talk that I saw like 2 weeks ago, this is before the CC's Pizza one.
Yeah.
My initial thought was, what's Deshaun doing right now?
There's a house fire. Let's be sure we get rid of all the water because we don't want people talking about how the water might douse out the flames.
Right.
So we don't want to distract people from the house fire itself.
Dude.
Get rid of the fire hoses, okay?
What?
Because the very issue is an indication that there's a much larger issue. There's something amiss if you're so worried about the psyche or the actual situation of your quarterback that's what needs to happen. This isn't like Tom Brady being kind of disgruntled about Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
This is much different than that, I think.
And again, Nick Wilson, the host there, is being clear. Like, this isn't something he's reporting. They're just as close observers to the situation and what it's been since Deshaun got there. He's saying this is a distinct possibility. Do you buy that theory?
I don't. This is where I would give the Browns a little bit of a break, if that is indeed what they would be thinking. I mean, if we just go by QBR, so QBR 50 is about, it's a scale of 150 is like your average NFL quarterback.
Right.
In his last two seasons, Jameis has been a 34.7 QBR and a 35.6 QBR.
Okay.
Jameis has done great work in maturing in a lot of ways. You know, stopped drinking alcohol a long time ago. You can tell by his physique and his weird workout videos that, he's a different dude now than he was when he was a younger player.
I don't think
he's the guy that they look at as an actual threat to come in and play really well.
Okay.
But if that's how they look at him, is he worth the distraction of being the fan favorite or the guy in waiting?
Does this change your opinion at all?
Hey, man, hey, Trey, it ain't just about having fun, man.
Yes, sir.
Remember the time you played your best football game in your life.
Yes, sir.
Remember the time after that victory you went to CC Pizza and celebrated with the boys.
Yes, yes,
for real. Feel it in your heart, man.
Okay.
It's a long way back to Cleveland.
Yeah.
Let's not leave it without a victory.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So put everything you got on the line today. Let's have a game of memory, man.
I
remember. Let's go.
Remember.
Family on three. One, two, three.
I'll tell you what. You know what, Sean?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, that guy that was just talking about his QBR in the last two seasons,
right,
where he was mostly as a backup, that guy was an idiot, because in 2021, he had a 69.8 QBR.
That was with New Orleans,
seven
right?
Seven starts.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was when he had an actual stretch as the starter and got injured. So you could go by that. Two sides to the coin is, all right, look, all of this time has been as a backup, or he started three games in 2022 for the Saints.
Man, a chance.
So, all right, not really fair to judge him based off of that small sample size. But back just not too long ago, he was a winning quarterback. He had a 5-2 record that year. I mean, he was doing some good things. So, that guy was an idiot who was just saying that before.
It goes to show you how good a team the Browns have built that this is their quarterback. Their quarterback is clogging up their salary cap. He might be super soft when it comes to people liking him and not liking him. They might have to be trading popular backups away. And yet I think the Browns are viewed as a team that's maybe not like Chiefs or Ravens level, but it would shock anybody if they made the postseason and won a couple games.
Honestly, and to defend the Browns even a little bit further, if you take everything else out of it, off-field stuff, just take all the off-field stuff out of it. I mean, that's just a moral minefield they were willing to walk right through. This roster, if they were getting Deshaun Watson as he looked in 2020, this is a Super Bowl caliber
Absolutely,
roster.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so I get why they made the aggressive move. I don't think they misjudged where they were in their development or anything. They have a really good roster, and yet just the most important position in all of sports, they are completely spinning in the wind on.
They missed. They missed. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Justin Verlander back on the mound yesterday. What did Espada think? What does Espada think after two Verlander starts? How's Verlander feeling after two starts? He's a key guy if they're going to win a World Series this year. We'll let you hear from both of them coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Down the first base side, diving stop by Harper, just like he did last night. He makes an excellent play against the Astros in the final inning of the game, and that'll do it. The Astros shut out tonight as the Phillies use three pitchers to combine on a six-hit shutout and win this game 5-0. The Astros have now lost 6 out of 8, and right now their lead in the AL West is down to 3 games. The Mariners will play later on tonight at home against Tampa Bay.
Mariners wound up losing, as they are wont to do quite a bit. So it's still 3.5 games this morning as we head into an afternoon affair between the Phillies and the Astros. So the current, at least in this micro window of the last 2 weeks, ace of the Astros, Spencer Arrighetti, will be tasked with stopping the bleeding today, Seth.
Yeah.
Their ace of the last 3 starts, Spencer Arrighetti. He's the man today.
Arrighetti is, look, the pitching staff, the starting pitching staff against all odds in a year in which you've lost 5 starting pitchers at any given time, the Astros have had 5 starting pitchers out, and yet the pitching staff is turning out to be just A-OK, other than the lack of of enough relievers right now.
Yeah, so I guess, he wasn't great against the White Sox, but he had those 2 starts earlier this month, man. 12 strikeouts, 13 strikeouts, and then he was really good against Baltimore. That 6-0 win, the only game against Baltimore that didn't come down to the late innings was Spencer Arrighetti just putting the clamps on him back on Thursday last week. So it's stop the bleeding, Spencer. We got to maintain this lead over Seattle.
When they were losing those close games, I was cool with it. You're losing close games versus really good teams, and yet look, with the guys who are out there, with an outfield which as a whole, if you take Yordan out of it, you know, out of the equation, you've got three guys that are extreme minus players at the plate over the course of the last 2 months, and somehow you're still where you are in the standings. It's astounding, but now I find myself back into a little bit of that, but like, how does this really weather the rest of the season in the playoffs?
Well, in this Jason Hayward signing, if you missed it, the Astros agreed to terms with Jason Hayward yesterday, former All-Star, five-time Gold Glover, made a ton of money through his career. Oh, it always feels like a guy who's made more than what his numbers dictate he should make, but he's been around a long time. Got let go by the Dodgers. Got picked up by the Astros. This, I don't know, man. This Jason Hayward signing makes me nervous about Kyle Tucker. And ostensibly, he's just replacing Chaz right now on the roster. Chaz goes down to Sugarland, finally, to kind of figure some things out. I don't say finally to throw shade. Like, Chaz clearly is not in a good place mentally hitting the baseball right now. We know it's in there somewhere, but it's just not happening this year. But this Jason Hayward signing, my gut reaction was, okay, Kyle Tucker, what's he doing? Is he playing catch today?
He's working his way up to sprinting.
Yeah, I heard about the sprinting thing. I'll...
Sean, that's one of the key skills of that's what a five-trait player, that's one of the five traits.
Sprinting.
Is he capable of sprinting?
Yeah.
A lot of times I'll be like, oh, look at that. Look at that guy. He's capable of sprinting. That's a five-tool player he is. That guy right there. Hell yeah.
The biggest...
Capable of running at max velocity.
Dude, I'll be so glad when this Kyle Tucker thing is over and he's back healthy again, because there's been so many fits and starts with it. Like, when he first goes on the IL and you're like, oh, okay, that whole him trying to stay in the game thing, when you and I were at that game, him trying to stay in the game, that would have been really dumb if he did that. So, like, him going on IL unto itself is really jarring, because the dude's been a rock. Like, he's been their most reliable guy just in terms of availability since he got to the majors. He's never been hurt. So seeing him go to the IL is jarring. Seeing this thing last for as long as it has been frustrating. The low point for me was when video finally surfaced of Kyle Tucker doing things in Tampa.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ooh, there's video of him doing things. Okay, he's doing things. This is good. And it's kind of far away video. And you zoom in and he's moving around like Sanford and Son, like Fred Sanford, like he's
everything but the heart attack.
Red Fox, yeah, coming to you. Yeah, like I'm like, oh, that's
what was Fred Sanford's departed wife's name?
Elizabeth. Yeah,
Elizabeth,
coming
yeah,
to you, Elizabeth. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as Kyle Tucker's not yelling Elizabeth, then I feel like the signs are all pointed up.
Okay.
There we go.
You say so. Oh, man.
Look it up, kids. I'm sure it's on YouTube.
Right.
Fred Sanford.
Right. I'm sure it is.
Sanford and Sons.
Sanford and Son, yep.
Son was so, that cool. The thing that people don't realize is how much money junkyard owners can make.
Yeah.
You know, they keep up with, what's his name? Fred's kid. What was his name?
Lamont. Yeah.
Lamont's doing all right. Don't worry about Lamont. Sometimes as a kid, I'd be like, how's this guy so smooth? He's, you know, and they've got this junkyard and his dad's such a mess. I'm like, all right, because he's sitting on a fat wallet.
Oh, dude. Lamont and Rollo out there picking up all the chicks. Yeah. Rollo with his pimp hat on and everything. That was the best. I love Sanford and Son, as you can tell. On Esther, Grady. Yeah. Joe Espada. Here's Joe Espada. Justin Verlander has two starts under his belt since coming back from the IL. Here is Joe Espada's evaluation of JV.
You know what? I think the sharpness of his pitches have been there. The shapes and, you know, the slider's been pretty good. He threw some really good changeups today, the curveballs. You know, I think he's in a good spot moving forward. You know, I don't want to, you know, it, again, outside of the third inning, I thought he threw the ball really well. I know he's going to build from this, make some adjustments, and he'll be pretty good in the next one.
So outside of the third inning, says Joe Espada, Verlander gets even more specific with the,
right.
Oh, what if? Here's
one pitch.
Yeah, here's Verlander.
It's okay. You know, I felt like first outing was a little bit better than this one. I think it's kind of to be expected a little bit. It's kind of like spring training. You know, you get out there in the first game and things feel fresh, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, you know, not as fresh next time out. So, you know, fairly pleased with the pitch shapes and some of the results I'm getting. Slider particularly, I feel like it's been pretty good. you know, was obviously not pleased with the overall results, but just got to continue to work and move in the right direction. Felt like, you know, like you talked about, Julio, one inning, really one pitch, you know, that I would really like back. And so when you have one pitch that ruins a game like that, in some sense it's really frustrating. In other sense, it's like, okay, you know, it was just one pitch. It wasn't like I was getting hit all over the yard. So I always try to stay positive.
There okay. It was a three-run homer,
yeah,
which doesn't happen on one pitch. No.
Takes a village to get a three-run home run. Yes,
yeah. Point of order here. It's like Verlander's credit. I think part of that is like, okay, you know, that easily goes the other way in terms of if you don't make that one pitch, a slider that hung a little bit. And, you know, you got to tell yourself enough to keep yourself engaged mentally. But I think he wasn't quite peak Verlander last night.
That's all.
So that one little soundbite kind of undoes, and that's the one that gets played. And the headline in the Chronicle is Justin Verlander rues one pitch and lost to Phillies. I think his whole quote.
Is that a real headline?
Yes. And that, by the way,
I feel like you and I are part of the problem when it comes to that, because just for making fun of him saying one pitch.
The Chandler Rome disease of describing things as such and such player awoke this morning as
every article, man.
30th worst. That's in the Chronicle a lot now too.
Is it?
I noticed it. Yeah.
Chandler does it. And Chandler, we need a drinking. I think Chandler does a really good job. I like reading his stuff. Every article has they awoke on Monday.
Right.
With a 9.05 OPS. He awoke
and also his other thing that he does is he makes you like do mental gymnastics in your head with things like they have eight teams have a better OPS than them in the month of October. And you're like, okay, so they've got the 9th OPS in the month of October. All right, okay. Thank you for making me think that through. Thanks.
Thanks for the extra work.
Sean and I, we're not calling, some of you accused us of calling Verlander fat. We were not doing that.
No.
But I would say that he might be 5 pounds over his peak male performance body weight.
I feel safe in saying he's not in the best shape that he's been in as an Astro or anything like that.
Yeah, I think part of this might be he just needs to play his way back into shape a little bit.
Maybe.
He doesn't look like, he doesn't cut the normal Justin Verlander silhouette out there. Maybe it's the gray uniforms, I don't know.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, maybe gray is not a flattering color for him.
I would rather he lose a little bit of weight than come back insisting on the blue jerseys next time.
Yeah. Yes. So someone texts in, so Tucker really broke his leg, ? Nobody's saying, but I think it's safe to say it's been more than just a bruise on his shin.
Well, no. It 100% could be a shin bruise. Like, this is a... Sean, we've been over this. A break would be fine. A break is no big deal, usually.
Yeah.
The deep bone bruise, sometimes there's just no predicting. Chandler Rome did a piece where he talked to four orthopedic surgeons about it and how it is it can sometimes be a very finicky recovery. So, no, there's no part of me that thinks like, oh, they're hiding something from us. Maybe there was a fracture or something, or a hairline fracture. But that, like, the issue is just all of the swelling and everything else that comes with it.
Oh yeah.
Or if it's a bone bruise or something like that, it's just sometimes people take a long time to recover from it.
I remember now. What is it called again? Like a compartment thing?
Compartment syndrome,
And
that's where that might be one of the things that it's involved with it. So there's a lot of stuff that can happen from a bone bruise.
Yeah.
And compartment syndrome is when there's swelling and all the little pockets of fascia in your lower leg, there's no room for that swelling to go.
Fascia.
And it can shut everything down. So there's a lot of stuff that can happen from a bone bruise.
Yeah.
So it's this. I don't look at this as the Astros hiding a UCL injury or something from them. I think that this is, as four different orthopedic surgeons and other in that article and other doctors I've talked to have said, this sometimes happens, and it appears that it's the most likely explanation is that's just what happened with Kyle Tucker.
There's three things I feel confident in. One is that I don't think the Astros are necessarily hiding something, as you just said. Two, Tucker is not doing this to get a new contract. As like some of you text, every time we talk about this, someone says, give him a contract. He'll recover miraculously. And number three, this is not me. Me and Seth, this is not our fault. Because we were at the game 15 feet from Kyle Tucker when it happened. For the Houston fans, text message, Payne and Pendergast banned from attending any 2024 postseason games.
Yeah.
No.
No, we were. No, I was guilty of the next morning. I gave it a 50-50 chance that he would actually play that same day. So maybe that's. Maybe I should be banned of making proclamations like
that.
There
you go. Yeah.
But because at the time, I looked at Kyle Tucker almost like, you know, the legendary Cal Ripken Sr., who, much like his son, had incredible recuperative abilities. There was a story about one time he was playing he was working as a first base coach, got hit in the face with a line drive. The next day showed up without any bruising on his face or anything.
Yeah.
I like that's how I thought of Kyle Tucker. There's no way a bruise will keep him out this long.
Yep.
The other thing, too. If you want a conspiracy theory about him having a broken leg, remember in that immediate week or two afterwards, he was actually in the dugout and like hobbling out to the high five line at the end of games.
Yeah.
So that's not something you do with a broken leg.
With a broken leg. Yep.
Yeah, I think it is what it is.
Yep. All right, Cougs play this weekend on Saturday against UNLV. We're going to give away tickets in the 9 o'clock hour. Nick Caserio press conference. Top of the hour, we will carry that live. He'll talk about the 53-man roster and whatever else the folks, the assembled media, have to ask him about. Speaking of the Cougs, Tillman Fertitta, with the most honest thought that I've heard any leader give when it comes to the NIL era. We've got that for you coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Nick Caserio, top of the hour press conference. He will talk about the Texans 53-man roster and other topics going on around the Houston Texans. So the Cougs get their football season started on Saturday. A reminder, you can win tickets to the game in the 9 o'clock hour. They introduced their new AD over the weekend on Saturday, Eddie Nunez, who comes over from New Mexico. They fired Chris Pesman earlier this summer. Bringing in a new AD. Houston, of all the Power Four conference schools, has the lowest athletic budget. They're at the bottom of the money train here. And that needs to change if you want to compete in today's environment in collegiate sports overall, but especially college football. And Tillman Fertitta had this to say, and I don't think it was during the press conference because I watched the press conference, all 30 minutes of it. And this quote wasn't in there anywhere, but I thought this was a fascinating quote. Because keep in mind, the Cougs have spent a bunch of money on facilities. They just built a huge $140 million football facility, really nice practice facility. This is what Tillman Fertitta said about today's environment. This is how much college athletics has changed. Now you can scratch your head and say, do we really need to be spending $140 million on a football facility? Or should we take that money from all those donors and use it on NIL? If you talk to college athletes today, they don't care about the building anymore. They care about how much am I getting paid. Think about it, because you know what they would all tell you. Give me that money, end quote. Which is really interesting, because when schools weren't allowed to pay players and NIL was illegal under NCAA rules, the way you would differentiate yourself is opportunity to play, playing time, facilities.
The facilities were huge. And that's where it was an interesting, is one of these things where you are a nonprofit institution, yet you have all this money flowing into the coffers. And what do you do with it? You build these gigantic, incredible locker rooms where like each player has his own TV and everything else like that. You use it to fund other sports, all of that. And yet the players themselves were, and this is where it sometimes breaks down. The disconnect is, you know, you want to say, like, well, I'm a red-blooded American, and look, they're getting free tuition, that's payment. Like, all right, if you're a red-blooded American and you believe in free markets and whatnot, they're all making the same wages. That sounds a lot like communism to me. You know, like everybody, no matter how good they are, they're all making the same wages.
What are you talking about? This is capitalism.
They get paid. What do they get paid? Is it based on future expectations or past experience? Nope. Whatever the tuition is at their school.
That's tuition and room and board, okay? Yeah. And books.
That's true. Yeah, like everybody in the old Soviet Union was getting paid. Paid, okay, they're just the exact same amount, no matter what.
It's funny because this quote basically, I mean, if we want to translate here, this quote basically says we wasted $140 million on a football facility. In a way, you know what I mean? Like that.
Oh yeah, right? Like that. We could have spent that on
on NIL.
We could have funneled that through other, or the people that donated the money for that facility could have spent it as NIL collective members or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't, and I think, you know, even in the article, it was implied that that's like I don't think. Like, someone's not shying away from that. Like, what are we doing? Why are we spending all this money on all these facilities and everything? Give the money to the kids.
You know what? It's interesting, too. I wonder if it goes that way. You know, some of the most successful football organizations in the NFL where, you know, money is the driving factor in a lot of decisions. The Chiefs are known as a team that skimps on all their stadium facilities.
Yes.
The Patriots were a team that are very bare bones in a lot of ways. That stuff just doesn't matter as much when the big carrot on the stick is how much money can I make?
How much money can I make? You know, and I think too with
and
kids,
then culture and coach and everything. That's where it can maybe ultimately come back around a little bit more to being more football driven.
Yes.
Than I honestly.
Then I have an Xbox in my locker. You know.
Right. Yeah. That's where I feel like the University of Texas ultimately, like obviously they can compete on the money side of things. But I think also maybe some of the things that led to at times a sense of entitlement amongst the athletes at University of Texas, maybe it just becomes more cutthroat in a good way.
Yeah.
That it is more about like, okay, I feel like I can win there and I can make money and then there we go. And it's more about, in a weird way, in making it more capitalist, it also makes it more about the football.
Yeah. You know who would like that? Dabo Swinney, who I believe he hates NIL. I think Dabo wants it to be like it was when he was at Alabama as a walk-on there and whatnot. I don't know if you heard this, Seth. Dabo, I know we played this audio and we're about to play it again. Dabo is no longer taking phone calls on his coach's show anymore. Because it's believed to trace back to late last season when Tyler in Spartanburg, South Carolina, called the Dabo Swinney show with this little shot.
Why are we paying you $11.5 million to go 4-4? And it's not just this year. It's been, you know, just the refusal to accept.
All right. What's this guy's name?
Tyler.
Hey, Tyler. I've listened to enough of you, Tyler. Listen, you can have all your opinions that you want. All right. I don't know how old you are. Don't really care. All right. But let me tell you something. We won 11 games last year, and you're part of the problem, to be honest with you, because that is part of the problem. It's people like you that all you do is the appreciation, the expectation is greater than the appreciation, and that's the problem. And so, you know, we've won 12 10-plus win seasons in a row. That's happened three times in 150 years. So if you want to know why, Clemson ain't sniffed a national championship for 35 years. We've won 2 in 7 years, and there's only two other teams that can say that, Georgia and Alabama, okay? Is this a bad year? And it's my responsibility. Take 100% responsibility for it. But all this bull crap you're thinking, all these narratives you read, listen, man, you can have your opinion all you want, and you can apply for the job, and good luck to you, all right?
I'll be honest with you. Like, I remember at the beginning, listening to the first part of that, I was like, oh boy, he might go off the rails on this one. And ultimately, he did get back to just the actual answer, which is like, because I'm a guy who's capable of doing this, I did that. And not to mention, I mean, if you wanted to go full logic on him, but not good PR, he could have said, look, the contract's guaranteed, you dumbass. like that's, because this is the way contracts work.
Right.
There's a way for him to be fully and transparent about it is, Was it a dumb idea to give Dabo Swinney a big contract after winning two national championships?
Right.
Of course not. And certainly they're not paying him for the current results. They're paying him for an expectation of future results.
Dude.
But I think that exchange, a lot of it can be boiled down to just tone of voice of the guy asking the question.
Yeah.
The kid could have asked the same question in a different tone of voice.
Yeah.
And phrasing a little bit differently. Where I could see where I think the internet trolls are now walking amongst us. You used to say, well, nobody would say that in real life. Nah, we got a generation of people who've grown up saying this like from the time they were 12 on social media, and they say it in real life.
They do. I want to make sure we get out on time here so we pick up Nick Caserio's press conference.
Okay.
Yeah, we got Nick coming.
I want to talk about Dabo as like basically a comparison to a deposed member of the Politburo.
All right, Nick Caserio press conference is coming up next. Stay there.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh.